A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. I was about an hour and a half into my day when I realized, oh yeah, it's St. Patrick's Day. So I had to go and find a hat with some green on it, find a green shirt. Green's not really my color, so I don't have a lot. But anyway, hopefully you are enjoying some corned beef and cabbage or kissing Blarney Stones, or whatever you do to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. We're glad that you're with us on the program. We're going to be talking with Rick Travis from the California Rifle and Pistol Association here in just a moment or two, primarily about AB 1333. So this is a bill that was introduced that would have attacked the right of self-defense. It was not specifically a gun control bill. In fact, I don't even know that the word firearm ever even appeared in the text of the legislation. But if it had been adopted, it would have impacted anybody who uses a firearm in self-defense, almost anybody anyway, by essentially requiring a duty to retreat under the guise of clarifying California's self-defense laws. Now, the good news is that this bill has been pulled, which in and of itself is a victory, especially in California, right, where typically, with the Democratic supermajority, any gun control bill that becomes a priority of House or Senate leadership is going to get to the governor's desk. And Gavin Newsom, I don't think, has vetoed any gun control bills since he's been the governor. So this is a victory for gun owners. And to learn more about how this victory was achieved, let's talk with Rick Travis from the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Take a look and a listen. Rick, thanks so much for coming back on the program. It's good to see you, my friend.
See you, too.
All right. So you tell me what's going on at the Capitol. I mean, I know about AB 1333, right? And we'll get into that in a moment. But for now, anyway, that doesn't look like it's much of a concern for the moment. What is on your mind in terms of legislation right now?
It's a very weird year in what I like to call excremento. Most people know this Sacramento, but it's a very weird year. You know, we've had all the tragedies, the fires, the budgetary issues and things, and we have a very different assembly and Senate leadership than we've had before. And public safety is obviously in any state capital where bills around the Second Amendment either gain traction or die fairly rapidly. And our public safety in the past has been very one-sided. This year, I'm still leans to the left. I'm not saying everything's been righted in the boat. But it seems the leadership is much more open to listening. I was prepared with a couple of bills for them to be killed outright. And one of the bills may go to consent calendar, which that hasn't happened in a quarter of a century. And if it does, I'll call you right up and go, unbelievable. But so far, it looks like we have a bill next week that will go straight to consent, which is like, what? That just never happens.
What bill is that?
That's our bill to help with the federal firearms dealers and their security door issues. And
Okay. Everybody
on the committee who has always been a stick in the mud before is like, well, no, this is just common sense, which has had me going, yeah, let's go with that. Like, I don't want to shake the tree at all.
Right.
Let's just go with that. But I'm also seeing a lot of the legislators think, and I'm also seeing a lot of Californians and nationwide, I think people are starting to wake up. As you've said many times on your show, people need to realize what starts in California really does go nationwide. It gets attempted everywhere else. They cut their teeth here. And so when AB 1333 came up, it attacked a wide breadth of people beyond just firearms owners. And so we ended up with people from New York, with the Taekwondo magazine. We ended up with people in Florida, people in the Carolinas piling in with us against the author, which that doesn't happen much in California. Less than I have fingers on one hand. And that amount of a coalition voice had an impact where several other legislators that would normally support Zabur took two steps back, like, not my circus, not my monkey kind of an attitude.
Right.
Which we realized, like, okay. And then Zabur pulled back and said, well, I'm going to amend it. And the hilarious point was he is one of the biggest fear mongers. He's one of the biggest misinformers. that we've ever had in the Capitol. And yet he pointed a finger at all of us and said, all you guys like to do is fear mongering and misinform people. We started laughing. We're like, look in the mirror, buddy. That's you. But as a result, he amended it to try to make himself look good, which he didn't. No one bought it, number one. Number two, he made the bill even worse. And then he just said, fine, forget it. And he pulled the bill. So the bill is dead for this session. That's okay. The good news. The news that I really wanted to talk to you about is, in the past, I think a lot of people are like, yay, it's dead, move on. No, I think this is the new move on the left, not just in California, but across the country. And the reason is because, for the most part, in states where they've gained footage, blue states, and some of the pinkish purple, as you know, they've tried to go after CCW rights. They've tried to box us in, and we're fighting that back in the courts. But now they're realizing in post-Bruin, we're not getting too far in these arguments because we bring it up. There's no historical, you know, relevance to this. You don't have that ground. You're just being unconstitutional. And a lot of the people, especially in a post-Trump election, are like, yeah, this isn't a wise place to go. So how do we still attack? And this particular bill was written by Everytown and Moms That Demand Action and Giffords. All their lawyers, those were the only three people backing them during this onslaught. And I think their new thing is now to go after the Castle Doctrine and a duty to retreat. And those are their two new areas, because think about it, if they can get that codified across the country, then Larissa's stuff doesn't have as much meaning or as much teeth as we have right now.
Yeah. You know, and to that point, Rick, I mean, so obviously they want the hardware bans, right? Obviously, as you say, they want to box in the right to keep and bear arms, but they also want to make it so legally dangerous to exercise your Second Amendment rights. Right. And this, I think, is a perfect example of that, right? If you remove the duty to retreat, then it becomes a question of, and by the way, you're not the one answering that. You're not the only one answering that question. Could I safely retreat, right? Then it's up to the prosecutors. Then it's up to the police to decide whether or not you committed a crime by protecting and defending your life. Right. And as a result, some people are going to say, you know what? It's not worth it to me to carry a firearm. It's not worth it to me to have a gun in my home because I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to be prosecuted if, God forbid, something happens, right? And so this is an attack on our Second Amendment rights. And it is sneaky because it doesn't directly implicate the right to keep and bear arms, right? Where all they're saying, we're not saying you can't have a gun. We're just saying these are the circumstances in which you can use that gun in self-defense. So it's an open question as to even whether or not the Bruin test would even apply to a statute like this. Right. So let's dig in a little bit into how this thing fell apart. Because as you say, so the original bill, the assembly member said from the get-go, well, no, this isn't about repealing the Castle Doctrine. It's not about impacting self-defense. He said it was about clarifying that you couldn't defend property with deadly force, right? What did the bill actually say, though?
Well, so bill said property. It also said you had to, if you were engaged in a fight for your life, you had to constantly tell the assailant, hey, I don't want to do this, and try to get out of it, which is absolutely ridiculous. But one of the problems with property is defining a property. So what you're telling me is I'm in my front yard and some guy's coming with a Molotov cocktail to burn my house down. I walk away and say, burn my house down?
Right.
Or I have, you know, in my case, somebody that's not well and they're inside the house. Well, it's not me, so I don't have the right to defend them. Or what about my dog? I can't defend my dog if you're coming after my dog, like, because the dog's property. You know, and one of the problems that I see nationwide with the far left is they want to make victims of everybody. That is their strategy, make everybody a victim so the victim needs them. And one of the things is, like, you know, we talk all the time in our community about post having to use your concealed carry permit, your open carry, your constitutional carry, because there is the chance, highly likely, that you're going to have some psychological counseling or issues because PTSD can happen. Well, the same thing happens, and as a former paramedic, I will tell you, to people who weren't able to defend themselves or weren't able to defend a family member or a loved one, you know, they have PTSD issues. And part of the problem that I always struggled with, and we have a class where I worked, I helped write, was the number of women I would find in kitchens and in other parts of their house with plenty of things to defend themselves besides a gun. and they never used it. And the reason why is because we're told, oh, don't pick up that vase because that's from great grandma. Yeah, great grandma probably had some freckle faced pimpled kid get it for a nickel at a carnival and give it to her, and it got passed down, you know. Or, you know, the knife, well, because you went to a cooking class and told you this one's for this one's for that, but your brain never thinks, oh, I could have used that, or the frying pan, you know, things of that nature. But when you have somebody writing a doctrine like this, says you don't even have the right to defend your kid, you don't have the right to do this, you don't have the right to do that, that gets inserted in a person's brain as well. And then they freeze up when they're under attack. And mm-hmm. so it puts lives at risk. And that really resonated with a lot of people, and a lot of groups that normally wouldn't side with us came together and said, no, absolutely not. We had homeowners associations, which, okay, you know, great, but came out and said, are you kidding me? Like, someone's, no, like, we're not going to put up with this. And a lot of people, he comes out of West Hollywood, and there were a lot of people in Hollywood that, you know, that's close to where the fires were. They watched what happened after the fires burned down. They were like,
right,
are you clueless? Like, so I think this is a wake-up call for a lot of people. But what I want to make sure is, you know, this is like a lot of things. When people first brought up the 11% excise tax, they said that will never go. It got defeated. And a lot of people took a back seat until it started spreading across the country like wildfire. So that's why I'm looking at a lot of people like, yes, we won round one, but this is a new area that they're going to go after, and they're going to keep going after it. And we've got to really educate the public of what does it mean, Castle Doctrine? What does it mean, the right to defend yourself?
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely spot on with that, Rick. And again, this, you know, this fight is going to continue. I mean, the gun control groups are not going to just, you know, fold up their tent and go home. We knew that right after the Bruin decision came down. There is a lot of money behind these groups. And more importantly, I mean, there is an ideology behind these groups that, you know, has existed for half a century or more that mm-hmm. does not believe that we have the right to protect ourselves with a firearm. And they will do everything they can to try to curtail that right. And it might be regulations. It might be litigation. It might be legislation. It might be a full frontal assault, like what we're seeing in Colorado and New Mexico with these, you know, bans on gas operated semi-automatic firearms. As you say, it might be something that never specifically mentions a gun. Mm-hmm. Right. But would still right. impact gun owners. Right. So I really appreciate you bringing this to our attention, because I mean, even that excise tax that you talk about, you know, it didn't pass in California, but passed in Colorado.
Well, it did pass.
It took what, two or three sessions for them to get it?
It took a total of 8 years, five sessions.
Good Lord. And that's the other thing, right? They don't give up.
No, we
they don't go away.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that
to be like, we have to have that same attitude.
Yep, absolutely. Well, listen, Rick, if we've got any California gun owners, actually, I guess, you know, you don't have to be a Californian to join the California Rifle and Pistol Association. If you want to help stand on the front lines here and serve as that first line of defense, how can folks join? How can folks learn more about what you guys are doing at CRPA?
CRPA.org. Just go to CRPA.org and join. Or if they have questions or comments about this interview or anything else, contact at CRPA.org and we'll get right back to them.
Awesome. Rick, thank you for everything you do, man. I really appreciate you joining us from Excremento. I'm going to use that probably more than the city officials would like there. But I really appreciate your time and look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to Rick for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again. We did get carve out a few minutes of his time because, there is always something going on there in Sacramento. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Here's the headline from the Tulsa World. Tulsa DA complains again about probation sentences from Judge Sharon Holmes. It's always interesting to me when you see a prosecutor call out a judge by name. And in this case, Tulsa County DA Steve Kunzweiler is complaining about one judge specifically, warning the public of possible dangers as a result, he says, of Holmes's orders that resulted in two defendants being released from prison on probation, not only over the objections of the DA, but by the State Department of Corrections as well. A statement from Kunzweiler's office says this judge's decision only benefits those violent offenders and puts the safety of the public at risk. Now, he did decline to speak to the Tulsa World for this particular story. And as the Tulsa World notes, the news release did not name Holmes specifically, but online dockets show that she presided over the cases that the press release mentioned. So Yes, he was calling out one specific judge. It made it pretty easy for the press to find out what judge that was. According to the Tulsa World, the two cases that were criticized by the DA involved decisions that Judge Holmes made back in February regarding two defendants convicted of unrelated violent crimes. On February 21st, she suspended the remaining 7 years in prison out of a 12-year prison term that Darian Young was to serve. He had been convicted earlier of shooting random vehicles, including one with three children inside. According to the statement from the DA's office, Holmes modified his remaining prison sentence to probation despite the Department of Corrections not recommending probation or a sentence modification. In fact, in the 5 years that he had been incarcerated, he accrued 9 misconduct sanctions, so almost one every 6 months, and yet the judge still said, let him go. He's fine. In another case that was decided last month, or at least modified last month, there was a 15-year prison sentence that had been handed down to a guy named Trevian Richardson. He pled guilty to 5 counts of armed robbery originally. Now, Kunzweiler notes that Richardson did have a clean record while serving his prison time, but according to the Department of Corrections, the violent nature of his crimes made him unsuitable for probation. The DA said in his release that citizens of Tulsa County should be able to drive down the street, go to the store, visit a library, or fill their car with gas without being afraid. Indeed. Now, the Tulsa World didn't say how much time Richardson had served out of that 15-year sentence before he had his incarceration modified to probation by the judge, but it doesn't sound like it was a long time. And the Tulsa World notes that this is not the first time that Kunzweiler has criticized Judge Holmes. In October of last year, he criticized her after she gave a man convicted of child sexual abuse probation rather than prison time, which is what the jury recommended. And then in 2021, he had also, quote, expressed frustration after Holmes gave probation rather than prison time to a man convicted of first-degree rape. In that case, jury had recommended that Malik Omar Vance serve 13 years behind bars after he was convicted of raping an 18-year-old. But instead, the judge opted to sentence Vance to 13 years of probation instead of any prison time. Now, the Tulsa World notes that the court dockets for both of those individuals indicates that neither has had any violations of the probated sentence, which is great. I mean, that's fine. But it doesn't change the fact that there should be consequences for these actions. Okay. So this guy who was convicted of raping an 18-year-old hasn't gone on to commit any more rapes. Well, good. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be, right? But that doesn't change the fact that he still got probation instead of prison for raping an 18-year-old. That was the consequence of his criminal action, probation. And that, I happen to believe, is a problem in and of itself. Apparently, the DA in Tulsa County believes that, too. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. A complicated case, it sounds, out of Minnesota, where a jury has acquitted a man in Dakota County in a shootout in which his mom was killed. He apparently was engaged in this quote-unquote shootout with his mom's ex-boyfriend. More than 36 shots fired in about a minute span, almost 3 years ago. Billy Joe Pryor Jr. was charged with second-degree intentional murder and 4 other charges in the death of his mom, 49-year-old Michelle McGill, outside of her home on July 10th, 2022. It was a 4-day trial. Jurors at one point saw video from a garage-mounted surveillance camera that captured part of the shootout. McGill was sitting in her car in the driveway when Pryor and her ex, a guy named Willie John Selman, started arguing and engaged in a gunfight, 38 rounds fired in less than a minute. McGill was shot 10 times. Selman, her ex-boyfriend, was shot in the face. And her son, Billy Joe Pryor, was shot twice in the stomach. Now, prosecutors had basically argued that both of these men were equally culpable, or at least culpable to some degree, in the death of Michelle McGill. Assistant Dakota County Attorney Evan Frazier said during the state's closing arguments last Wednesday, the two men responsible, the two men shooting with a fervor to kill each other, both walked away, while Michelle McGill did not. Her last moments were spent caught in the crossfire between Mr. Selman and the defendant. Now, Selman had pleaded guilty to second-degree murder by drive-by shooting in June of last year And he was sentenced to 10 years in prison, which also a downward departure from state sentencing guidelines, but a second-degree intentional murder charge was dismissed as part of the plea deal. McGill's son, however, Billy Joe Pryor, was acquitted on all of the charges. Selman had testified as a state witness during Pryor's trial that Pryor fired first, which, yeah, you can imagine why he would want to say that, right? Even after his guilty plea, Pryor, testifying in his own defense, said that Selman had shot first. And again, it was up to the state to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Billy Joe Pryor Jr. did not act in self-defense or defense of others. His attorney, Assistant Public Defender Sean Reinhardt, said, if you think it's reasonably possible that Mr. Selman shot first, then you have to find Mr. Pryor not guilty. He went on to say that if Pryor did not shoot first, that no single shot that he fired was illegal. And in these circumstances, he did not have a duty to retreat. You know, again, this is a complicated story. And ultimately, there is a tragedy at the heart of it. I don't think the prosecutors allege that Mr. Pryor had intended for his mother to die, but that she was basically an innocent victim of these two guys who couldn't keep their testosterone under control and engaged in a gunfight, shooting at one another. The problem with that argument, though, is that somebody did shoot first, right? Somebody did escalate a verbal argument to a physical dispute to deadly force. And it sounds like, again, in this case, the jury heard all of the evidence and came to the conclusion that Billy Joe Pryor Jr. acted in at least self-defense, quite possibly even in defense of his mom, who again, unfortunately, was shot and killed during this attack. All right, on to today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I guess this is more of an update to a good deed of the day. This was because the good deed actually happened, gosh, close to 5 years ago. A woman named Brooklyn Boyer was in a pool and she hit her head on the bottom. And a guy named Alan Mann, who just finished lifeguard training, saw what happened. And he said, you know, lots of people say it's coincidence or something, but he said, I just think it's a God thing. He said, that day was hard, but looking back at all the things, all the good things and blessings that came from it, just really amazing to look back and be like God was with us the entire time. Not only did Alan Mann and Brooklyn Boyer stay in touch after he saved her life, they are now getting married. That's right. That is the headline. Man proposes to woman whose life he saved after near-fatal pool accident. KCBD in Lubbock, Texas, reporting on the good news update between Brooklyn Boyer and Alan Mann. Brooklyn said, you know, I sit all day just looking at the ring, and then I'm like, that's probably bad, but I just can't stop. I'm just so happy. So happy. That's pretty awesome. Apparently, they started dating secretly in high school. First date was to a Sonic drive-in, which is pretty awesome. So they had known each other when Brooklyn Boyer had that accident. But Alan Mann was there to save the day. Brooklyn Boyer said, you know, I told him afterwards that I understood if he didn't want to continue dating or anything like that. Just because, I don't know, I wasn't naive to that. But not everyone can do that or wants to do that. But he never left my side, she said. She said, I told him again when I was in rehab. And he was like, I don't want to hear you say that again. So there you go. 5 years later, from a lifesaver to a life partner, Alan Mann, and his lovely bride-to-be, Brooklyn Boyer. I guess, in a way, both in the right place at the right time. And hopefully we'll get to enjoy a long and happy life together going forward. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Scam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. We'll be covering more of the latest Second Amendment news and information. By the way, no orders from the Supreme Court today, so Snope is still alive. In fact, it was listed once again for this Friday's conference. So the earliest I think we'll hear about Maryland semi-auto ban will be next Monday. We're going to get a dissent or a denial with the dissent. We're going to get acceptance. Who knows? I've quit predicting. I'm not even going to predict that we get a decision of any kind from the Supreme Court next Monday. But we are all anxiously waiting to see what SCOTUS does with Snope. And we got another week to wait. So there you go. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, as good as Mondays can be enjoyed. I mean, at least we have a holiday, right? We'll see you back here tomorrow for 2-8 Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.